Welcome to the In Hope Podcast, where each Monday we drop a new episode to help strengthen unity in the body of Christ. We want you to be part of the conversation, so make sure you comment, like, share, and follow. I'm your host, Preach. We got a great conversation for you today. Let's get into it. So we'll also put rice on it. So like rice with the spaghetti. It's really good. Not everybody will do it, but she'll make that. One of my favorites, I can't pronounce it. It's a breaded steak, and she makes some rice with beans in it. People are going to be upset at me because I'm not able to pronounce it, but I don't want to butcher it right now. So there's those. And then I'm the breakfast guy. So I don't know if you have certain things in the house where it's like, okay, if this is being made, Brandon's making it, but I'm the breakfast guy.
I'm the ribs guy.
You're the ribs guy. Okay. No, yeah. For sure. That makes sense. Absolutely.
Are you trying to look like a ribs guy?
No. I just feel like that's very, very common. It's very stereotypical of us, you know, that the guy is the one on the grill or, you know, making the steak, the ribs, that type of stuff.
I mean, it's okay. I do look like a guy that eats ribs.
So yeah. Hey, I love ribs. Oh. Yeah. So I'm eating ribs all the time. My friend, he ruined me. My friend in California, my boy Jamil, he's a beast when it comes to grilling.
Yeah.
And he'll smoke almost all day. And he made these ribs one time and you couldn't pick up with the bone. The bone would just come right out. And it was, it was so good. And so barbecue restaurants have a hard time with me because
you have this comparison.
Yeah, he ruined me. He ruined me. Like, I can't, you expect me to pay for this?
And more.
Right? Yeah, and more. Then come on. But he's really good at that. I wish I was even, you know, half as good as he was on the grill. Usually when it comes to that type of stuff, I'm still making it at the house, but I wouldn't say I'm even close in comparison. So, and then the breakfast stuff, I'll usually try to make the breakfast stuff. So pancakes, eggs, omelets, all that type of stuff. Burritos. I love making breakfast burritos.
Oh, I like breakfast
burritos. I'm a breakfast burrito guy.
Yeah.
All the way.
I'll eat those every day.
Yeah. And then one of my favorites is Chick-fil-A's breakfast burrito. I don't know if you've ever had
it. Oh, I haven't had it.
Oh, yeah. See, a lot of people don't realize.
How did you know they
had that? A lot of people don't realize this, that Chick-fil-A has phenomenal breakfast.
Okay.
Yeah. They have chicken biscuits. They got English muffins as well. They used to have bagels. I don't know if they have bagels anymore.
Let's try them out.
So, but yeah, they have.
I've never around a Chick-fil-A in the morning.
Right?
Because there's none out in Cuna.
I will intentionally wake up sometimes. Like, we will prep this. Yeah, we will prep this because we have to drive up, right? Uh-huh. It's not super close. Yeah. So we will prep this. We'll be like, we have to get out of the house by this time so that we can get to Chick-fil-A before 10:30 because that's when it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think they might be putting one on Meridian Road, though.
They are. No. It's not Meridian. It's on 10 Mile.
Oh.
It's on 10 Mile and the highway. That's going to be the closest one to us now.
Got it.
Because as of now, that's the closest one. Yeah. The closest one's on Eagle and the Village. And So that's going to be good. That's going to be good. Okay. I know I told you I have this topic and it may, you know, ruffle some feathers, just especially getting started, right? So stick in there with me. I want everybody to stick in there, right? Because just even getting it started, you know, it could turn some faces sour and whatnot, but I want us to hear it all the way through. Because I feel like, you know that saying where all truth is God's truth?
I haven't heard that saying, but that sounds good.
Okay. So yeah, there's that saying. Well, all truth is God's truth, right? To where sometimes people will be coming to the wrong conclusions. Mm-hmm. But within their parameters, there's certain truths to what they're teaching, right?
Oh, sure.
So they may come to the wrong conclusion over so much, but there's certain things that they're pulling out that are true within that. And we don't reject and throw all that truth out just because of, you know,
the context.
Because of the context and where their conclusion went and all that type of stuff.
That could go along with like the God's law is written on our hearts.
Yeah.
And so no matter what we do, we're going to have some of that mixed in with whatever our beliefs become.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, so there's this idea of, okay, we may not be able to take everything that they're saying, but the truth that they are speaking, we don't want to just throw away and call null and void.
Throw it all out.
Yeah, we don't want to just throw it all out. You know, baby with the bathwater type of deal. And it's just recognizing those things and that no one has, you know, this claim on they're the ones that, you know, discovered this, found this, and, you know, therefore they get all the credit for it. It's like, no, like God's the one that created that law.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's his truth. So in getting into that, I almost want to ask you.
Okay.
If you have anything you want to talk about first.
Oh.
Did you have anything?
I didn't have anything specific. Okay. I knew you had a question.
And you know I had a question. Like, okay.
So, I don't know what this question is, but I'm ready.
Let's okay. Go. So here it is. Here it is. I want us to talk a little bit about what the church can learn when it comes to unity, what the church can learn from this idea of anti-racism.
Anti-racism.
Yes. And so this is a big word. That is pushed amongst DEI and within college campuses when it comes to diversity and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's this idea, and it really comes from this book. There's a book called Anti-Racism.
Yeah.
And again, we have to hold on to what's true, because in no way am I saying we agree with everything in this book.
Right.
All right. Some people will. Some people will agree with everything in the book.
Uh-huh.
Other people would adamantly oppose a lot of the stuff in the book. But there's this concept that comes across in this book of anti-racism. And really, it's I'm going to dumbify it. So I'm going to be missing some of the intricacies and whatnot. Yeah. But I'm just going to kind of peel it back and say, OK, how can we apply this to unity? And what it is you have... For the longest time, we've thought of racist, not racist, right? And it's like there's your
two
ends of the spectrum, two options, right? He says, no, that's not the two options. What you have is a continuum of you have very racist over here, and not racist is not the other end of the continuum. That is more towards the middle, right? And the other end of the continuum is anti-racist. And so he kind of goes through and uses some examples of this. Okay, you have people who are just blatantly and proudly racist, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll have a whole continuum where, you know, things are diverse and kind of spread more and more, but you'll have this idea of in the middle, you may not be racist, but you're not really anti-racist. You're not against racism. And you may even carry some of the views and values that, you know, feed into racism. And you know, you don't oppose it. And so, and that's where we're getting into anti-racism, where it's like, okay, no, over here, you recognize and you oppose racism, right? Yeah. And you stand against it. And so it's not just a matter of, well, I'm not racist, but you're opposing it. You're, you know, you kind of...
You'll come fight against it.
Yeah, you'll fight against it. You kind of combat it, and you're intentional about making sure that racism isn't at play type of deal.
Got it.
Right?
Okay.
And so there's kind of that continuum there that they bring up in this anti-racism book. But what about when it comes to unity? So, and this is literally where I was like, okay.
Yes, I guess I need...
Interesting.
I need a little help understanding.
Yeah, yeah. So when it comes to unity... We could say you have those that are, you know, opposed to it, so to speak. So we're kind of flipping it, because unity is a positive, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to racism, we look at that as a negative. But we're still going to kind of use that continuum and saying, okay, we have this idea of there is those that are opposed.
Mm-hmm.
We have those that are not against, and we have those that are for. And so I guess the best way of looking at this would say, when it comes to division or when it comes to disunity, how do we say that? Are there certain ways and practices in which we can say, okay, no, we cause and we kind of push disunity?
Mm. Okay.
Are we just saying, no, I'm against disunity, right? Or I'm not somebody that causes disunity.
Right.
But do we go so far as to say, no, I am opposed to, and I push back against, I sniff out disunity,
right?
And I'm making sure
prevent
that,
it.
Yeah, preventing disunity.
Got it.
And so I think that's interesting because sometimes in order to get to unity, we have to be able to recognize and make sure that we're properly going about dealing with disunity, right?
Right.
That's...
Yeah, like, are we actually trying to correct disunity?
Exactly.
And be like, well, why aren't you working together? Why aren't... What are the reasons behind your actions?
Exactly.
Disunifying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so...
I can see that.
So, yeah. So my thought is, okay, what does that look like? What does that look like in the church? When it comes to disunity, are we simply just saying, oh, I'm not against disunity, or I'm not for disunity?
Right.
Or are we more on the end of, no, we're going to oppose. We're going to make sure we kind of push out and not allow disunity. And one of the reasons why that kind of comes to mind is because there's also, I should have had these pulled up. Now I'm going to have to use my phone a little bit because there are certain passages where in scripture we see this adamant opposition to disunity and division, right? And are we practicing that out? Because unity was such a big deal within the early church. I feel like there was also this adamant opposition to disunity and division. But I don't feel like we see that now. I feel like we're more in the, well, I'm not for disunity type of area.
Well, sure, because even like with all the different denominations and stuff, we've allowed some form of disunity there, right? Where we're like, okay, well, you can believe what you want to believe. I'll believe what I want to believe. And I think that's a challenge, though, because a lot of what those things come up from is just different interpretations of things. And so it's like, how do you fully get everybody on board with the same vision as far as that goes?
Yeah.
And, you know, every church has their, these are the things that we are closed fist on. These are things we're open hand on as far as like, what's doctrine that we're not going to change?
Yeah.
We're not going to bend on at all.
Yeah.
And what are like more like cultural differences, like music and how we do communion and those kind of things that come up. So, I don't know. That's an interesting question. That's a really challenging question, I think, because anytime you have a larger group dynamic, you're going to have more opportunities for disunity, and you're talking about billions of people.
Absolutely.
So, like, how would you fight completely against any disunity within the church as a whole? That'd be really hard to do.
Absolutely.
Right?
So it's like, well, and we're decentralized.
Yeah.
As a church, right? We don't have one main head honcho over all the church, save Jesus Christ, right?
Yes.
He is the head. And then from there, we're very decentralized. Mm-hmm. He passed off a lot of authority to the disciples.
Right. Yeah.
He literally handed over the building of the church to them. And so with that, and I shouldn't say the building of the church, but you know what I mean. So, so with that, with us being so decentralized and there not being kind of this chain of command that you can work your way through, I don't know that we could, other than laying out biblical principles, you know, and emphasizing biblical principles amongst one another, because I feel like it's already there, right? It's in scripture. It's just a matter of, are we living it? Are we applying it? And that type of thing. Other than that, I don't know that we could look to leaders or to any single solution and saying, this is how we're going to solve it.
Yeah.
I think this is going to really have to come down to more of, how do we practice this in our communities?
Yeah.
Like within our sphere of influence, in our specific community, how can we practice this and making sure that we're not just saying, oh, well, we're not for division, but we're actually opposing it.
Yeah, I think one of the ways is actually like the job that I'm going into with NYM, like this idea of we can have some little disagreements about these open hand things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why not still work together as churches for bigger things? So like, for example, Valley Network, they're pulling together churches to help plant new churches. Now, they might not fully agree with that new church on every little thing.
No.
Like the main things are there, right? Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Exactly.
He came for for our sins to provide salvation for us. So that I think they agree on those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing, right? What we do see, I think, in church culture today is that not all churches are willing to work together, mm-hmm. even if they can, even if they do agree on the main things.
Yeah.
And there is kind of this my church, your church, and and that's something I think we should fight against.
Yeah.
We should fight for churches to work together, because I do believe that when you pool resources like that, mm-hmm. we're going to have a greater impact overall.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going into what I'm going into.
Because
the idea is that as we bring youth pastors together, and then Valley Network brings pastors together, is that the more we can work together, the more we'll be able to help build up new churches.
Yeah.
Because one church building can't hold everybody.
Exactly.
So you have to have multiple churches.
Yeah.
And be okay with the small differences so that we can create more opportunities for different people to come in. And they're all cultural differences that I think are okay to be okay with, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and I think they matter. Yeah. There's a value and a benefit to cultural differences even.
So. And those aren't just unifying. They're different, and there might be someone's like, well, I'm not going to go to this church because of this music or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we should definitely be okay with those things
and
be like, okay, well, there's another church down the street that plays Latin music, you
know,
versus modern rock, modern Christian rock, which
right.
is what a lot of the churches do. And so there's these differences. It's like, okay, it's okay to send people. And that's where being unified, and it's like, well, it's okay if you go to another church because we're all the same church.
Exactly.
But maybe you have some cultural things that you want from a church that we're not able to offer. And I'm not going to be upset or feel like I'm in competition with this other church mm-hmm. because you're going there instead of here.
Yeah.
And that's some of the stuff I think we've seen within church culture that is unhealthy. And mm-hmm. we should call out and be like, be okay with someone going to a different church because they think the music's better there.
Yeah.
Know? It's like, it doesn't matter, because the main goal for each church should just be to spread the gospel as far as they can.
Yeah.
And we get, we're human, so we get into these things of like, well, we need the income here, or we mm-hmm. need whatever it is, and that's I'm sure that's a driver.
We need baptisms,
it's just not true. Like, that's not what we're called to.
Yeah,
and so and that's hard though, because we are still human.
Yeah,
right. So we have to kind of fight that battle.
Yeah,
and it is helpful to have other people. And do these kind of things with other churches to help feel better about it, honestly.
Exactly.
Like doing things with other churches will help you get to see.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like, that there's other people, and we are all fighting for the same thing.
Exactly.
Which is really not against each other. It shouldn't be.
No.
It should be, we're fighting against the worldly things that are mm-hmm. taking our kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have... enemy that's going to give us a hard enough time.
Yeah, we don't need to create it within the inside.
Yeah, we don't need to be each other's enemies, right?
That's right.
The enemy's hard enough at work. We don't need to help him out.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And so I think you're completely right there. And I think there's something there between ministry leaders
mm-hmm.
where we need to be able to have these conversations. We need to have these coaches, these mentors that are coming alongside of us and reminding us. Because I think at some point we can all stand back and kind of, again, going back to kind of how this anti-racism thing works, right?
Yeah.
We can stand back and be like, oh, yeah, racism is wrong.
Sure.
Right? Oh, yeah, division is wrong, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes we need that reminder,
yeah.
right, that, okay, this looks like we're feeding into division.
Right.
This is something where we're allowing division here and we're not speaking against it.
Yeah.
Why? Why is it okay here? What's going on?
Right.
And so I think that comes that's where having that relationship community. So like, even for example, with the youth ministers, right? Being in that network, building that relationship. Now you're able to have those conversations versus when a minister is isolated.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have those mentors, you have those coaches, you have those people that you respect that are working alongside of you, we can really encourage this amongst one another that, hey, we need to make sure that we aren't talking ill about other ministries.
Right.
Right. We need to make sure that we do have open hands and open arms when it comes to working with other ministries. And where there is hesitation, well, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Why? Like, why is there hesitation?
Right.
Right. And, well, we don't know if we do this outreach together where these people are going to end up at church or if it's going to be a outcome for us. We need to be able to say that's not a good reason.
Yeah.
That's not a good reason. Let's remember what this is about. Yeah. Will this help grow the kingdom?
Right.
Like, yeah. And so I think absolutely. Yeah, I think
putting that vision back in front of people over and over again is good.
Yeah.
But what you're like, what you're talking about, it's kind of, I think there's some laws about this and I don't know if this is every state, but like,
yeah,
if you're sitting there and a crime is happening, and you don't do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you guilty of like not doing anything?
Yeah.
And in a way that's kind of what you're referencing. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, if we're just standing there saying, oh, that's bad, but not actually, when we're seeing it, not doing anything, then are we just as guilty of not entering into that?
Yeah.
And that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So if we're seeing disunity, like how can we actually battle it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even kind of putting a little more, another scenario to that as well, is that I think sometimes there's warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't speak to it, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you're in a community and we know that, I'm just going to go there. We know that prostitution is illegal,
sure,
right? And there seems to be like some mistreatment, but we don't want to assume, right? But we don't go there to like make sure things are okay. We don't talk about, hey, you really shouldn't like challenging each other. Brother, why are you talking to your daughter like that?
Yeah.
Like, she's a child of God too. You need to treat her with respect, right? And so where we can actually challenge each other versus, oh, we're just gonna let that slide because, you know.
You mean like talking to someone?
Yeah.
That's engaged in that.
Yeah. So say someone, because unfortunately, and I hate that this is a fact, is that unfortunately, a lot of times when it comes to human trafficking and those types of things, it's a family member, right?
Oh, sure.
It's a family member. And unfortunately, a lot of times it's a parent or a guardian or something like that. And if we wouldn't overlook when, you know, parents are not treating their kids with respect, maybe in public, because maybe something slips, you know, they're getting, they say some things that are inappropriate or whatnot,
right.
But we kind of just, we let those things slide.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that situation of, okay, well, we didn't realize that they were, because it'll come out later, right? We don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't realize that they were, you know, human trafficking their daughter or treating them that bad, right? We realize that sometimes they don't treat them the best.
Yeah.
But we didn't realize they were treating them that bad. Well, if we would be able to have those conversations and encourage them to treat them better on the small things, then maybe we would be able to hinder, right, and pull back more of what's happening behind closed doors.
Yeah.
I tell people, and I would tell this to teens all the time, whatever you do in public, I'm going to assume, and I'm thinking about like between a boy and a girl, right? Mm-hmm. And we're talking PDA. Whatever you do in public, I'm going to assume you're going at least twice as far in private.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So if in public, you're willing to do a little bit of division.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume that when you're in your comfort zone and behind closed doors,
right,
you're likely doing a lot of division.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm going to speak towards that little division, right?
Right.
So kind of
that you do see.
Yeah.
You'll speak towards.
I'm going to speak towards that.
Probably worse than it actually is.
Exactly. Right. Because we're not breaking any laws, right, when kids are kissing on the couch.
Right.
They're not breaking no laws, right? Yeah. That nowhere in the Bible does it say you can't kiss on the couch, right? Ain't no law broke, all right? But if you over here making out on the couch at church or just in public, I'm going to assume that in private, you're going a lot farther than that.
Sure.
Right? And so when I see you kissing on the couch, I'm going to tell you stop that, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna stop that right there. I'm gonna speak to that. even though it's not illegal and whatnot. But I'm going to speak to that because you shouldn't be doing that here.
Right.
Right. And we, again, what you're doing in public, I'm going to assume you're going a lot farther in private. So we're going to have a conversation, me and you. Right.
Right.
What if, and I feel like youth pastors get used to that, right? Youth pastors know that role. But what about amongst one another when it comes to division? Are we letting those little things slide, the little PDA, mm-hmm. the little public displays of division, right? The PDD.
So you make a reference like that public display would be like, oh, this church over there, I think they're whatever.
Yeah. Or
that, like kind of minor thing.
Yep. Kind of those little minor things and whatnot. What if we made sure, and I'm not saying we have to come at them hard and be like, what are you doing? You can't say that or anything like that.
Sure.
I'm not saying come at them all super hard, but what if we gently, lovingly, right? With kindness and love, we kept reminding each other, hey, we're all on the same team. Let's make sure that we're encouraging each other. We're not speaking ill of each other and that type of thing. Right.
Well, and then the question becomes though, because that in theory is great.
Yeah.
Right? Because you want that unity. But then what if that church down the street is not living or not running their church biblically?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
What if they're like false prophet, so to speak, or something mm-hmm. like that? Then what do you do? Because we're called to unity.
Exactly.
And you might know something about that. Like, so then that's another sort of,
I think that's
good.
Spike
in the side, right? Because you're like, yes, I want to call everybody to unity and I want every church to get along. But then there probably are churches that are not following a biblical.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even say probably are. They're definitely
are. Well, definitely are. Yes. 100%. Or, you know, there's some really bad teaching happening or something.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain unity as the general churches, or how would you speak into or try to correct that church? Mm-hmm. I think that's actually originally, we've talked about this in our church a little bit, what the original like elders were. They were more of like mm-hmm. over the town rather than how we have it set up now, which is like just within the small
within
churches.
Yeah, your one church.
And it's too bad we got away from that mm-hmm. because I think there should be this is an accountability thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there should be better accountability over like whole townships.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's like elders that are grouped together that do that. I don't know how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But there is kind of like that, because there needs to be that ability to do what you're doing. It's like, okay, I see a disunifying church here in the sense that they're, not that they're talking bad about other churches, but they're teaching wrong.
Mm.
Like, how do I, because that's disunifying too.
Yeah.
Because I've heard of churches being like, our church is the only right church
mm-hmm.
in this town, even though they're a Christian church and there's other Christian churches. It's like, that's weird, you know, because that's not biblical.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That if people are following Christ through their different church names, like
mm-hmm.
it's not just your church that they're
who is Paul
through, right?
Who is Apollos, right?
Yeah. The different churches that were established under Paul, you know, the Corinthians versus
mm-hmm.
the Ephesians and all that. And they had their own little church settings. They can't be like, oh, Ephesian church is the only way to Christ.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
They can't do that. And so there's some of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So who gets to speak into those problems
mm-hmm.
and bring them up as like that you're disunifying the church?
Yeah. See, and I think that's a great question because you're right. We don't have, and something that I've, the name that came to my mind was this, and I might mispronounce this, Cyprian mm-hmm. Model. So he was a bishop long time ago, and he was a huge advocate for unity in the church.
Yeah.
And he was a bishop, and something that they regularly practiced was kind of what you're mentioning here, mm-hmm. where they would have the bishops and the elders, the priests in that area, they would come together regularly, and they would decide and talk about amongst one another, hey, how is the church going to respond to this?
Yeah.
So that we're all on the same page, right? How are we going to respond to this? And so they would regularly have these meetings amongst one another. The church leadership in the area would come together and say, okay, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to respond to this? What do we think about this? And they would come to decisions together.
Yeah.
And that way it kept the church in that area on the same page, and it kept the church in that area working together and not combating and fighting over different things. But it, it showed a unified front, really, to that area. Even so much so that they called each other together at some point. And I forget, I wish I could remember exactly what the issue was. I want to say it was the appointment of a new pope or something like that. And so they came together and they decided whether or not, you know, as that area, what their response was going to be to whatever decision the Vatican made at that time, if it was even called the Vatican at that time. So that is something to where, hey, why can't we get church leaders together regularly? And maybe we can't do it. So you talk about within a community, that would be harder over, you know, a whole county or, you know, a whole area. Like, for example, we have the Treasure Valley, which is made up of multiple counties out here. That's harder than, say, your town specifically. Or, you know, even the west side of your town or the east side of your town, right? To be able to, depending on how big your town is. But there should be, and I think that's where it comes back to, is if you have this church, right, that's kind of going off the wall. Okay, what relationships do they have with the rest of the church? Because if they do have healthy relationship with the rest of the church in their area, then those other church leaders should be speaking to them. If they don't, then they've already isolated.
And in a way, they're probably showing
That
there's a problem.
They're showing there's a problem. When you, I have never not seen a believer start to isolate when there's an issue in their faith walk. When they're starting to maybe do some, like, some type of, you know, backsliding into old habits, or they know they're not doing things the way they should, and there's some conviction there, I've never seen a believer not start to draw back. And isolate.
Well, it's a lot easier to not have accountability. Remove all your accountability pieces.
And so I feel like when there is isolation, when a church is isolating, if you have your congregation isolating from the rest of the churches in the area, there's an issue there.
Probably an issue.
There's likely an issue.
Yeah.
Because you can't say, oh, well, it's because the rest of them are wrong. And some will.
That's what we're talking about.
Some will be like, oh, the rest of them.
Everybody else is wrong except for us. There's probably an issue.
But if you are in a church where your pastor is telling you everyone else is wrong, I know that that may tickle your ears a little bit, because it makes you feel like, oh, well, I got it right. No, you need to be careful.
I would question that for sure.
You should absolutely question that.
And yeah, I think you're right though. Like, that's, I guess that's another benefit of what we're trying to do with Valley Network and NYM is, like, by bringing pastors together, there is a little more opportunity for accountability too.
Absolutely.
And I haven't really even fully thought about that as being like a big benefit. Because I think as you get relationships with different pastors together, they should be able to recognize those kind of things. And, you know, we need to be counting on the Holy Spirit. Like, God should be helping us through that, and He will. I believe that. I believe the Holy Spirit's a real thing. And that He will help guide us when we're we need it, and He'll help guide people to know, like, when they need to speak into things. And Paul did it all the time. Like, well, he was always like correcting the church. If you look at all the letters of the letters of the New Testament, they're correction letters. They're love letters too, but they're also like, hey, you guys are...
Well, it's correction out of love. A lot of it is,
and that's what it should be, right?
Like,
he says, restore them gently. And it should be come from this loving place of like, hey, we see what's happening here, and can we talk about it? And I think you're right. I think if there's pastors or youth pastors that are like, no, I don't need that kind of community. That's
a problem.
It's a little bit of a warning sign. Like, not 100%. Sometimes it's maybe just ego at first.
Which again is a warning sign.
That's a warning sign. That's true. Like, because pride is not good either. That's something Jesus very much spoke against over and over again.
Well, I'm going through Ezekiel right now. And I mean, time after time, when God says prophesy to Egypt, prophesy to Tyre, prophesy to this country, this city, almost every single time, one of the biggest things he points out was you're prideful.
Yeah, totally.
And he's the judgment is coming because of pride, right? Yep. And so it's like, ah, that's scary.
He wants us to live in humility. Yeah. And being able to be spoken into by other people is is what that is.
Absolutely. Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. No, yeah. So I think that's big. Being able to do that with one another. And then if there is a leader who's, you know, trying to isolate, or they have isolate and they're saying that, you know, where they're the only one.
Yeah.
You need to know as a believer, possibly within that congregation, that, hey, that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah.
And you kind of pull back from that. Mm-hmm. And consider, right? And in this, we would start to practice more of that. Okay, we're not just not going to be the ones that divide. We're not, you know, going to be for division. Mm-hmm. We're not going to kind of be a, you know, a spectator or a silent spectator. Yeah. We're going to oppose this. Right. And so there's this one letter as we're talking about these letters. So in Titus, this is in Titus 3. And I'm going to go ahead and read from, I'm going to read this verse in a couple of different versions. My favorite being the ESV. It says, "As for a person who stirs up division, after warning him once and then twice, have nothing more to do with him." Right?
Yeah.
The Berean, or we'll go with the New International Version. It says, "Warn a divisive person once, and then warn them a second time. After that, have nothing to do with him." The Berean, "Reject a divisive man after a first and second admonishment." Hmm. Right? And so, I mean, it's pretty clear here, and this is only just one of multiple different areas within the New Testament where they really come against this idea of division.
Yeah.
And saying that, hey, we can't allow this.
Right.
This isn't going to happen. This isn't going
to
work.
It's okay to give them two chances.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, we have the conversations.
We have the conversations.
There's grace there. There's opportunity for change. But yeah.
Yeah, but it's serious. It's serious when he's saying warn him once, warn him twice, then nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I like that idea. Okay. We're not going to be ones causing disunity, but we're also not going to just kind of be in that neutral area. We need to say, what are we doing to oppose it?
Yeah.
Right. And are we keeping our eyes and ears open to make sure we're standing against disunity?
Yeah.
And these different ways.
And how are we creating those accountability
exactly.
levels? Right.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. Some churches have this, some churches don't. But that they do have like that kind of elder or trustee or upper. I mean, the church is set up that way for a reason.
Exactly.
Overseers, other churches that are speaking into them.
Yeah.
Because it is super important.
Absolutely.
So I think if you see that that's lacking, I think we should help approach those churches, be like, hey, what about having some of this accountability built into your system? And that's for you, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for your benefit because we're all able to stumble and miss follow, like just not follow correctly.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And misstep. And everybody has blind spots. Like everybody.
Yeah.
I went through a study on that once and you just kind of realize like, well, we never think we have blind spots, but it's a blind spot. So how are you gonna know where it is?
Yeah.
You know, until someone helps you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of been through those processes before. It's like, I didn't realize I was doing this thing that, that isn't what I should be doing.
Yeah.
Or is offensive to people or whatever it is. And not until you have that accountability piece and someone that's willing to talk to you, and then you also be willing to hear.
Yeah.
Will you have any kind of change like that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Who was it that I was just talking with? And they mentioned how someone was upset because they wouldn't counsel them. Mm. But previously, multiple times, they just completely ignored and went opposite of the person's counsel.
Oh, sure.
So it was like they counseled them, didn't listen. Mm-hmm. Counseled them, didn't listen. And it was just like And I've literally had this happen with someone. Told them, hey, don't do this. This is going to happen. They did it. And it happened.
Yeah.
Don't do this. They did it. Don't do this. They did it.
Yeah.
Right. And so there came this point where they wanted counsel. They wanted some counseling. And they were like, no. We can't.
Right.
And they were like really upset about it. But we saw, like, you're not valuing this. You're not taking it seriously. It's
I'm not a voice that you're gonna listen to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it really, you have to be able, it has to work on both sides, right? Yeah. And I have multiple people that I'll reach out to at different times, and the every now and again that I'll have something come up. This has happened multiple times, and then I'll reach out to like three or four different men that I really admire, that I respect their opinions and whatnot. And what's funny is they don't always give me the same response.
Mm-hmm.
But if all of them are saying the same thing, I'm not likely to just be like, oh, no, I'm just going to do something
more
completely
likely
different,
to listen,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even in that, not all of them are giving me the same response. So there's going to be times where they counsel me, they give me some advice or whatnot, and I don't follow that because I followed, you know, maybe the two or the three one, others or whatever it may have been, or it was kind of like a combination of things they said. So I may not follow it exactly to a T, but rarely is it that I asked them multiple times, you know, I've asked them multiple things, and then I just did not listen to them at all.
Right.
Over, you know, over weeks and months.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think there needs to be.
Well, because that's the difference between humility and not, right?
Yeah.
So being prideful is like, you don't have anything to tell me. Mm-hmm. You don't have anything to teach me.
I already know.
I already know.
I'm hoping that you confirm.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm my
I just
bad
wanted
activity.
You to confirm.
Totally. And so, you know, God knows what those things are. And so we need to we need to come to a place of humility if we wanna work for the kingdom, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, and now I think I have this wording down when it comes to unity as well. Yep. So it would go in an opposite direction. It would be you're either opposed to unity.
Mm-hmm.
You can be kind of in the neutral where you're saying, well, yeah, I know unity is important or whatnot, but you're just more neutral to it. You're not opposing it, but that doesn't mean that you're actually pushing for it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're fighting for it, that you're making it a priority. Right. And I think that's, we want to see people move more down to that, continuum of, no, this is a priority because I think if you ask, you know, 99% of believers would tell you, yeah, we want to be, you know, one church, we want to be united and whatnot. And obviously we have different viewpoints on exactly what that looks like, what that means, because we're not saying like, let's all get one denomination. Let's all make sure that we all have the same worship styles, right?
Right.
Let's make sure that we all agree on all this doctrine, right?
Right.
No, that's not the case. But so we're not looking for this conformity piece, but I think most would say, yeah, okay, we want unity.
We want to work together.
Yeah, we want to work together. We want unity. We don't want to oppose unity, at least, right? So they're going to be there in the middle. But I don't know that a lot of people are saying, okay, no, this is going to be a priority.
Yeah.
We're going to make this something to where we're considering this when it comes to our schedules. We're considering this when it comes to how we're interacting with other churches. We're going to consider this when it comes to what we say and how we do things and really pushing for it. And we need to make sure we're more towards that and we're really pushing for it. And I think that's synonymous with that idea of also opposing disunity, being on that end where we're saying, no, we're not going to allow that.
Yeah.
So.
And not many things happen for good without some intentionality of it, you know.
Come on
like,
now.
If we don't do anything or anything, we're just like, oh, yeah, well, I agree with the Bible.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, what are we called to do?
Exactly.
Like share it with everybody else, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to just share itself.
Exactly.
Like we're called to something there. And so we can be all for it.
Yep.
And if we're not doing anything to help other people understand what it is, then are we really that for it? You know?
Yeah.
Like, because there's no action involved. So it's kind of the same thing you're saying. Like
oh, yeah.
With unity, if we're for it, but we don't do anything, it actually brought up a thought.
No, we're actually just not opposed to it.
Well, we're just not. It's just not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I was thinking when you were saying that, I was like, how many churches, because I haven't really seen this a whole lot, make part of their church planning like how they're going to interact with other churches.
Oh, dude, you're getting into it. You're getting into it.
Like,
oh,
yeah. Like that actually brought that up for me. I was like, man, you know, I haven't really thought about that much within our church. We have our own events a lot. And there has been some.
Yeah.
Like, I won't say that's not happening because it's definitely happening. Like, we just did a big food drive in CUNA and it was multiple churches were involved. And so that was a collaboration with other churches.
Exactly.
But like, we don't do that much, you know, and I'm sure there's churches that don't do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so
absolutely.
How could we do that? How could we be more intentional about like when we're doing our church plans, like how many events are we going to do with other churches?
Yeah.
Or how many outreaches are we going to do with other churches?
Yeah.
Rather, I think outreach is be more important than just events. Uh-huh. Right. Like how are we going to serve the community together?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really good and that's only going to happen through those kind of networking.
Yeah, like being intentional, systems. Making time and space.
Talking to other youth pastors, talking to other pastors.
Yeah.
And seeing what everybody else is doing and saying, hey, can I either join you in that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I think there's this other part is like, I got the best ideas over here, so you need to join my thing.
Mm.
So that needs to go away.
Yeah.
And be okay with that. Another church might have a better idea than you have.
Exactly.
And going, and I could say I'm probably a little guilty of that because I like making ideas. I love having my own ideas. I have good ideas.
This one was anointed. I know.
And sometimes that will be great.
Yeah.
People will join me in that. But I need to also be able to go, oh, that's a great idea. And that, or that person, that church is doing a great job with the food bank.
Yeah. Exactly.
And how can we join them and help them be successful?
Right.
Because we'll be a lot more successful if we get everybody together. And then we saw that.
Yeah.
And that's happening. So so there's things we can point to. We're like, yeah, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool. And we did raise way more than if one church would have done on their own.
Yeah.
And so like, how can we do more of that kind of stuff?
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. There is, you made me think of this and I'm only going to throw it out there. We can't sit on it. We're going to get in this into a whole nother episode, but there is something that's called the four flows of communicative constitution of organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this comes back to is, okay, this is how, plain and simple, this is how an organization is made. This is what makes an organization what it is. This is the thumbprint, the fingerprint. This is how it comes together and how it builds itself and continues to form and shape itself. Mm-hmm. And it's broken down into four flows. One of those flows that I don't know churches spend a lot of time on enough. I think it's usually, you know, when the church is being formed and they have to decide whether or not they're going to be in this denomination or that denomination, they think about it a little bit. But we don't sit in this area and really fulfill it and use all of the things that are associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is your within your context and see now, oh, I'm spacing. What is it called? You have. Oh, man. See, now I got to look it up. How am I spacing on this? I'm blanking. And it's because I know there's a camera on me. That's the only reason I'm blanking on this.
Yeah.
Let's see.
We can cut this part out. It's cool.
There it is. See, that's the word I was looking for. Institutional positioning.
Okay.
All right. Institutional position. I just needed to see the eye and I was like, okay, I got it. Institutional positioning. So really what this says is, okay, within your institution, within the larger framework. So if you are, you know, Best Buy, within the institution of electronic stores or electronic sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you are a movie theater, say your Cinemark, okay, within the institution of, you know, movie theater industry or the larger, you know, cinema industry altogether, you know, where are you positioned? Well, what's your network? How do others within that industry see you? What is your relationship with others in that industry? What's your piece in there? Do we think about that enough as a church, especially when it comes to within our community? Like, what is our institutional position? What's our relationship like with the other members of the body here, the other organizations?
Right.
And how do others see us? How do we fit in? How do we interact and those types of things? What is our activity with them and that type of thing?
Right.
So I think that's really important that's something that I want to get in, because I want to talk about all four of those flows and really dig into them.
Yeah.
But that's something that you just brought up. Yeah. How do we fit within the larger institutional position, within the larger big C church of big our C area, church. Right?
Yep.
How do we fit here? And I think that's really important. And if we have a healthy place there, then we're going to have those relationships that are going to also help us with that accountability and remind us, and we remind them, it's the kingdom that we're working for, not our individual congregations, right? And in that, we can help provide that accountability. We can help each other out to where we're making sure we're pushing for unity and not just in this neutral space where we're not moving for unity, not moving against it, but we're just kind of chilling and letting it happen. I think that idea of being intentional is really big.
You literally won't go anywhere without the intentionality.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't even say you won't go anywhere.
Might even go backwards.
Thinking, Well, when I was thinking, gravity is a real thing.
Right.
Right. And so if you're not trying to do anything, if nothing else, and it may take a while, but gravity is going to eventually bring you down.
Yeah. We talk about like attrition. And it's the same concept.
Yeah.
Like this is talking about like vision for a church.
Yeah.
It's like a bucket with a hole in the bottom of it. You can pour the water in, but you got to keep pouring it in.
Yeah.
There has to be an action of like keep, or it'll just leak out the back.
Absolutely.
And it's the same kind of idea with what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You can keep. You can have the bucket, and it could even be full of like I love unity.
Yeah.
But unless you're putting it in there, it's just going to flow out the back and eventually you'll have an empty bucket.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you can't just let it sit either, right? Because then it becomes all grimy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Right? It becomes nasty. So you need to make sure you're doing something with that water.
Yeah.
And we should be, ideally, you keep on pouring and it's overflowing, right? Yeah. And you're filling other people's buckets and that type of thing as well. So, all right. We got to wrap this one up. We're going to come back to those four flows though.
Sounds good.
That's going to be a good conversation. I'm really looking forward to that one. Thank you for joining us for the In Hope podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Remember, we want you to be part of the conversation. So comment, like, share, and follow. Also, we want you to consider being a ministry partner with us. For as little as $2 a month, you can help continue this podcast and other ministries that teach about unity and invest in collaborative efforts. Connect with us via social media throughout the week, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Monday on the In Hope podcast.